Good morning, Nexus. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm on kind of plan B here because when I got outside to film, I realized I had forgot to charge my batteries last night. So, hey, we're inside this morning. I'm sure many of us are, though, because it's a little bit of a miserable out there. At least I think it's going to be on Sunday, so that's my projection into the future. Anywho, thanks for joining us this morning. A quick reminder for those of you tracking along with us online, or for those of you who call Nexus home, as the end of the year approaches, we'd like to encourage you, if you're in a position to do so, to support and invest the work of Nexus. And your generosity is appreciated, particularly in these trying times. So again, if you're in a position to give, we would be most grateful for your gifts. So thanks for considering that. But for this morning, what I want to do is I want to bring this Goat on a Cow series to a close. And since basically the beginning of October, we've been talking about learning to see these bump into God moments. We've been talking about how we can discern and realize when we've encountered God. And so over the course of this series, I've of course told a lot of big stories, right? About, you know, Johnny Cash and Francis of Assisi. And I realized that in telling those stories, you know, the inadvertent message might be, wow, moments where we run into God are big. And so I want to take us back just quickly to William James' definition of a religious or mystical experience, because I want us to keep that in mind as we move to exit this series. Bumping into God, religious, mystical experiences are not just these big voice from heaven moments. William James defines them this way. A religious experience is a sense of reality, a feeling of objective presence, a perception of what we might call something more deep and more general. And again, what I think this means is we're not looking necessarily for those big voices from heaven moments, but rather those moments where we feel like there's an objective presence in the room with us, those moments in life where we have this sense of something more. It's those moments when we feel like there's something more than just the sum of the parts around us. And I mean, for me, these experiences are often things like when I'm in nature, I get this sense that there's something more than just sort of me having a neurological brain response to the aesthetic beauty around me. Or whenever I hear a song that really speaks to me, it's like I feel like there's something more. There's a presence in the room that's greater than both me and the song itself. Or when I'm laughing with friends, right? It's this sense that there's something more than just some sort of social norm that's happening here when we're laughing together. It's like there's a presence. There's something more than the sum of its parts. Or when I feel called to sacrifice or give my life away, again, it's like I sense that there's something more to that than just some hardwired evolutionary impulse in me or some sort of social pressure beyond me. There's this sense of something more, and it's those moments that we're looking for, because I'm inclined to think those are moments we bump into God. And what the Christian path asks of us is that we train our eyes to see those experiences. And so to close this series, what I want to do is I want to share some practices, you could say, practices that I think will help us strengthen our eyes. And what I want to do is I want to lean on some of the rich traditions within the Christian path. And next week, I want to talk about some of the traditions coming out of Celtic Christianity that have affected me and I hope maybe help you. But for this morning, I want to sort of parse two ideas out of Christianity's contemplative tradition. And let me be very honest with you. A lot of what I've learned from the contemplative tradition within Christianity, it hasn't really stuck with me. I mean, I've read Richard Foster's books on spiritual exercises. I've been to conferences on spiritual exercises. And I got to be honest, a lot of it hasn't stuck, you know. So I might learn something about breathing prayer and I try that for a few weeks, but it kind of falls by the wayside. So I want to stay really honest to myself this morning and not just tell you about stuff that hasn't worked for me. What I want to do is share with you practices that I've been steeped in, I would say, for years. These are ones that have stuck with me over time and ones that I continue to practice. And so my hope, of course, is that these practices that have shaped me, they might also be of benefit to you, or at least get you thinking about your own practices for strengthening our eyes and learning to see those moments where we've bumped into God. And so the contemplative tradition within Christianity, what it emphasizes attention and awareness, and what it sort of teaches us is that we miss bumping into God because we are so often distracted. Our attention and awareness is not what it could be, so we need to discipline ourselves. I mean, it's kind of like, remember that dancing gorilla video years ago that went, it was like viral, right? Like you were asked to count this team passing basketballs, and so you're paying attention to this team passing basketballs, and at the same time, you totally miss that a gorilla walks right through the room. And I remember the first time I saw this video, I was so shocked because I was so focused on trying to get the right answer for how many passes they had made. I totally missed the gorilla. In fact, when they played it back, the first time I saw it, I actually didn't believe it. I'm like, no way a gorilla walked through the room and I missed it. And yet what we learned through that video is so many of us did, and it's a great metaphor for life, especially the spiritual life. And what the contemplative tradition is trying to say to us is, listen, God's like that gorilla walking through the room. God is walking through our lives, but we just miss it so often. So here's the thing. While I haven't had a lot of contemplative practices really stick for me, I want to share with you two that have really influenced my life, really been with me as a constant for at least the past decade. So I want to dive into that now. So one of the things Kristen and I do at dinner time amidst the chaos, eventually when we get everyone seated and there's like 10 minutes before all chaos breaks loose, one of the things we do with our kids at dinner time is we have them go through their highs and lows of the day. Some call this exercise roses and thorns. And what we're trying to do with the kids is help them identify those rose moments, those high moments in the day when they felt happy, when they felt peaceful, when everything felt good for them, but also these thorn moments or low moments in their day when they felt off or sad or angry perhaps at something. And we love doing this exercise at dinner time because not only is it hilarious, because especially with Evie, her low moments often around her feelings being hurt because someone didn't do what she wanted them to do. But beyond that, what it allows us to do is help the kids understand and discern God's movement in their lives. And when we allow our kids to pay attention to their hearts, to their emotions, to their reactions throughout the day, moments when they felt sad or happy, it allows us with them to cultivate an awareness of God's presence in their lives. And this exercise that we do with the kids, it's really just a junior version of an exercise that Ignatius of Loyola came up with centuries ago. Of course, Loyola, he was the founder of the Jesuits, and he was this great spiritual leader. He basically came up with a number of spiritual exercises, wrote manuals for prayer and spiritual disciplines. And the point of his exercises, of course, were once again always about how we can develop stronger eyes, how we can learn to be attentive and aware of God's presence in our lives. And while most of his practices that I've read have come and gone for me, the one that has stuck with me is his prayer of examine. In fact, Loyola considered this to be the most important of his spiritual disciplines. In fact, he said, if you're going to do one prayer a day, make it the prayer of examine. Now, Loyola called the highs or roses and lows or thorns. He had a different name for them. He called them the consolations and the desolations, which feels a bit intense, although in this time and age, maybe that works. Where are those things that console you through the day, and where are those things that just desolate you, right? And so for me, this has been an exercise I've practiced for many years, and it tends to happen late at night. Either I'm sitting kind of right below here, right before I go to bed, or sometimes even in bed itself as I'm preparing to go to sleep. It's simply a review of your day. And what we're looking for is the presence of God in our lives, where we either moved closer to God or where we moved away. And so the question is sort of as you review your day, where did I feel stressed today? Or where did I feel angry or annoyed or impatient, or where did I feel sad or depressed? Or maybe I felt ashamed of something, or maybe I felt completely worthless. Where are those moments and what prompted them? where are those moments where I felt distant from God? And then those are the moments, of course, of desolation, but then there's the moments of consolation. We also ask, of course, of ourselves, where in my day did I feel peaceful? Where did I feel like I had purpose or mission? Where did I feel joyful, relaxed, happy? Where did I feel whole as a person? And those questions are designed to prompt us to consider, hey, in those moments, were we moving in sync with God? Was God walking through our lives? Did we bump into God? And beyond that, we ask other questions as well about our words and our actions. For instance, did I speak to someone rudely today? Was I harsh with my wife or kids or others? Was I thoughtless with a word or action? Did I gossip about others? Did I cut them down? In those moments, as we review our days, they become those moments of desolation where we moved away from God. But then, of course, there are other questions asked. With my words, did I maybe bring encouragement to someone or support? Or did I bring them comfort? Did I give anyone praise today? Did I build them up? Did I extend kindness, maybe gentleness to others as well? Or maybe where did I act selfishly or rude? Or maybe I was aggressive or harsh? And the whole purpose, of course, is that we're trying to sort of discern where do we stray from God and where do we come close to God in our days. And the point of the exercise is, of course, to determine patterns. It's not to beat ourselves up about what we did wrong. It's not a big guilt fest. It's simply a process of discerning, learning to see. And what we tend to find is, as you do this over and over, you discover patterns. As you do this kind of day by day and it becomes sort of steeped into you, start to see patterns in our life. There tends to be high and low moments that might revolve around certain times of day, certain people, certain events. And what the exercise does is it allows us to start paying attention to the rhythms of our lives, allowing us to see, hey, I bumped into God here. I was close to God here. Here I was distant. I mean, consider a budget. I don't know about you guys, but Kristen and I have, over the course of our whole marriage, been so all over the place with budgeting, right? We tend to go in this pattern that we're on a budget and sometimes it's like money in a jar, you can only spend cash, and then we go off the budget and then we're like, oh no, we got to get back on track. And our whole lives have sort of been this budget up and down process. And right now, lately, we're on a budget and we're keeping track of things. And one of the things that I find interesting about tracking our spending and budgeting is the patterns that you begin to notice in your spending that you weren't even aware of. And so as we've been going through ours, suddenly things start to jump out at us like, hey, Kristen, might want to tone down on the Starbucks every week, you know? So there's these certain patterns. You go, wow, we spent more on this than we thought we did. I mean, one of the patterns we noticed, Kristen and I recently, is that Friday nights tend to be nights that we eat out. And it's never planned that way, right? We've got groceries, but it always sort of Friday, end of the week, both of us are tired, nothing's prepared. And so we end up ordering out. And so by tracking these patterns, it's allowed us to say, okay, so we're pretty drained at the end of the week. Chances of us cooking a meal on Friday night, not going to be very good. So what we've done is, hey, let's make sure we have a meal in the slow cooker so that when we get home on Fridays, there's nothing to think about. The meal's already prepared. And that's what a budget does. As you track your spending, you track your patterns, you can make adjustments. And the prayer of examine is designed to do exactly that. As we track the patterns in our lives, where we are at our worst, where we're at our best, where we're bumping to God, where we seem to be straying from God or far from God, we can make those adjustments over time. And I gotta say, an exercise like this to me makes sense even if you're not religious. I mean, even if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in an afterlife. I mean, if you believe that we really only have just this one life, there's no dress rehearsal, this is it, then I mean, how sort of tragic to go through our days without sort of trying to track patterns of where we feel most alive and where we feel completely drained. I mean, this exercise just makes so much sense on so many levels. It's a way of looking and charting and tracking our lives and trying to find ways that we feel more energized and alive, but also places where we tend to be our worst selves. And of course, for those that follow the Christian path, it goes beyond just that. You know, it goes beyond just, hey, I get hangry at around 4 o'clock, maybe I should have a snack. It's not just an exercise we do to sort of limit frustrations and maximize pleasure in life. It's something we do to help us learn and see God patterns in our lives, where God is moving, where God might be nudging or bumping into us. It's a discipline that allows us to track where we tend to move towards God and where we tend to move away from God. And so I would encourage you to be open to a practice like this, to give it a shot for yourself and just start to realize the patterns, but also to be open to the idea that we do bump into God throughout our days. And when we have the eyes or are looking through a lens, looking for God, suddenly those moments start to become more prevalent. But the reverse is also true. When we realize that God is moving in and out of our days, then we also have this realization as we track our patterns, those times that we're at our worst, those times when we're farthest from God, and we can make necessary changes to adjust. The second practice I want to share with you is one that has been with me for years, and it comes from a man named Brother Lawrence. And Brother Lawrence was a lay brother in a Carmelite monastery in Paris during the 1600s. And by all accounts, this Brother Lawrence guy was far from an extraordinary guy. He wasn't sort of, you know, high up on any social ladder within the monastery. In fact, I was looking up this week. I don't know if you knew this. I certainly didn't. But apparently there's like a huge hierarchy within monasteries. I actually jotted them down here to just give you an idea. You start out as an oblate, and then you become a candidate to be a monk. Then you're a novice, then a lay brother. Then you move on to choir monk, then a harrow deacon, then a harrow monk, then a subprior, then a prior, then an abbot, then an archimandrate, and then you can be a mother superior. I mean, it's like this huge ladder, and sort of the more sort of spiritual you are, the more credentials you have, I suppose, you move up the ladder within a monastery. And here's the thing with Brother Lawrence. He never made it past lay brother status. He didn't work his way up the monk hierarchy ladder, I suppose. In fact, his role at the monastery for his entire time in life there was simply help in the kitchen in the sandal repair guy. And yet over the years, his demeanor while working in the kitchen and repairing sandals, it was so overwhelming to some of the other monks that they began to seek him out for spiritual guidance and direction. He had this spiritual energy and vigor about him, and Lawrence just seemed to have this special quality about him, and he became very sought after. And one monk in particular recorded some conversations with Brother Lawrence, and after Brother Lawrence's death, he collected those and some letters from Brother Lawrence and turned it into the classic book, Practicing the Presence of God. And I remember I was given this book in my late 20s, and it came at the perfect time for me. Because at this point in my life, I was all about do, got to do more. And this book, it just liberated me. And its lessons have stayed with me for over a decade now. You see, Brother Lawrence's secret was simple. For him, God is everywhere present. God was right there with him in the kitchen while he's chopping up tomatoes or scrubbing pots and pans or working with leather and repairing sandals. For Lawrence, God was everywhere present. And the trick to the spiritual life for Lawrence was twofold. First, it's making ourselves aware of God's presence by carrying on a constant conversation with God. This is what Paul, I suppose, would say is pray without ceasing. For Lawrence, it was an unending conversation with God. And second, doing everything, whether it's cooking, repairing sandals, doing everything for the love of God. Now, I suppose some of those might sound cliche, but the idea is this. When our thoughts stray, we bring our attention back to God. When we find ourselves, say, annoyed with a boring task, we remind ourselves we're doing this task for the love of God. And this is the liberating part of Lawrence's ideas and practices for me. You see, for Lawrence, the spiritual life wasn't about adding activities to our lives. It wasn't about doing anything else. For Lawrence, the key was this: doing exactly what you're already doing. Whatever that is. be it walking the kids to school, doing laundry, doing dishes, tracking your budget in an Excel spreadsheet. Whatever you're doing in life, just do that. But do it with an awareness of God's presence and do it with a love for God. The spiritual life and the rest of life are not two different things. In fact, this is how Brother Lawrence described it on his end. This was his key. Do what you already do. Just live your life. But do it with attention to God, an ongoing dialogue with God, and do it for the love of God. And by the way, side note here, I know when we talk about things like for the love of God, it's like, what does that mean? It can sound cliche. What does it mean to do things for the love of God? John Mark McMillan had a definition recently of the love of God that I just found like bang on. It just speaks to how I sort of see it. He put into words what I think I was thinking. He said this, "What does it mean to love God if not to be obsessed with the powers that led to your existence?" Ah, I love that. To love God is to be obsessed with life, with the energy and vitality of life, the essence, whatever it is that created us. That's what it is to love God, to be obsessed with the powers that lead to life and vitality and existence. And so when we consider that with Brother Lawrence, it's allowing ourselves to be in constant dialogue with God, with that source, you could say, and doing everything for the love of that. And so this was Lawrence's advice. Don't add anything. You don't need to do anything else. Just do what you're already doing, but do it in constant conversation with God. Do it for the love of God. And what I've found, friends, slowly over time is that it changes how you see. And I can't begin to describe how liberating this is. I mean, consider just this week, for instance, we were doing the weekly campfire in our backyard, and we were talking about those times that God sort of convicts our heart, calls us to some sort of mission. And there was a comment around the campfire, like, so what do we do? What collectively can we do? And I remember somebody else around the campfire was like, oh, please not another volunteer opportunity. My days are already so full. Not one more thing. And I loved that conversation around the campfire because it sort of just really put into a moment the tension I think many of us feel. You know, a lot of us in the church, we feel like, oh my goodness, I need to do more. There's so many things wrong in this world. I need to get involved in every cause, every sort of issue that comes up, do more, more, more. And that is paired along with this tension that I think many of us feel like, oh, come on, I'm already tired. My days are already stretched thin. I hardly have enough energy for what I'm already doing. Now you're asking me to do more. And what Brother Lawrence says to us is you don't. What Brother Lawrence's message is just so liberating because what Brother Lawrence is saying is, listen, just do what you're already doing. Because what we have to trust is that God doesn't need us for everything. We have to trust that God has sort of other agents in the field, you could say, right? It doesn't rest on us. And we have to trust that what God actually wants from us is to just show up to the lives we're already living, the lives we already have. And if we started by just opening our eyes to what's in front of us, what we're already doing, the people already in our lives, our eyes will begin to adjust and allow us to see God's movement in our lives. And it plays out so much more often than we realize. You don't need to do any more. Just wake up to the life you're already living. Look for where God is there. Because here's what I think. If we trust that, truly trust that, that God is active in our lives, if we can learn to trust and see that, then my hunch is that it will guide us to where we need to bring our time and energies. Just paying attention to our lives, making ourselves available to God's presence, opportunities will arise. Just keep the conversation going with God and do things for the love of God and see what happens. So let me try to explain how this actually works in my life. I'll give you a story that just happened yesterday to me. So I'm always trying in my head, of course it doesn't always work, but I'm always trying to keep the conversation in my head as a dialogue with God. And when that happens, when I'm in tune with that, interesting things can happen. So this week, my internet was down all week. It was driving me nuts. And so I call Rogers, I think it was, you know, Tuesday, whatever, it doesn't matter. Call Rogers. They try to fix it over the phone. They say, hey, we think it's fixed. Then the next day, the internet's down again. So I call them, like, I really think I need a tech here. So a tech guy comes out. He fiddles around with this and that. He says everything's fixed. He leaves. The same problem happens again. My internet is dropping out. So I call them a little more urgently. This time you could say, like, we really got to get this fixed. My internet keeps dropping. So they send another tech out just yesterday. And the tech guy arrives and he's standing in my driveway trying to explain what's going on. And this conversation is taking way too long. He's got this little computer. He's like, if you take a look at the screen here, you'll notice that there's problems in the area. So this is not a tech issue, it's a maintenance issue. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He's like, I'm a tech guy. Maintenance needs to come out. I'm like, oh my goodness. So he's going on and on. But then he's trying to show me how this same pattern works. He's like John King at his magic board, trying to show me how this pattern is playing out all over KW. So he's like, hey, look at, see, you can see this area of Cambridge, same thing's happening, this area of Waterloo. And he's going on and on and on. And in my head, I'm carrying on this dialogue with God, and I'm just expressing, like, oh my goodness, I don't have time for this. All I want to do is say to this guy, just do what you can to fix it and leave me alone. And he keeps going and going and going, and I'm just losing it inside. But I've got this dialogue with God going in. And for me, it's a sacred imagination thing. It's not that I actually think God is speaking to me. I think faith involves imagination. So it's like this imaginary conversation going on, a sacred imagination, you could say. And what I keep hearing is, just be patient. Don't lose your cool. This person is just doing their job. Just slow down, listen. And it's getting harder and harder and harder. And finally, this guy says, hey, you know, sorry I've been rambling on here. He's like, I'm just having a moment here on your street. I was like, a moment? He's like, you know, about 40 years ago, my dad was a garbage collector. And he said, back in those days, there were no safety standards. So my dad used to bring me on the garbage truck with him. I could hang off the back and with my dad. And so we'd go around on his garbage route and I'd hold on to the back of the truck, great front. And he said, Brubaker Street is one of the streets on my dad's route. And he said, you know, my dad passed away 30 years ago, and I haven't been on this street since. And he said, I'm just sort of relishing this moment, thinking back about my dad. Memories, fond memories I have with my father. So he said, sorry, I'm carrying on. I'm just really having a moment here, thinking about my father. And I didn't do anything. All I did in that moment, I suppose, with that ongoing dialogue with God, is it gave me the patience, I guess, to keep space, make space, not sort of lose my cool. And in that moment, it gives this guy just an opportunity to experience this memory of his father on the back of a dump truck. And I was reminded, my goodness, had I lost my cool, maybe it would have spoiled his memory for him. And I was just so grateful in the moment that I didn't sort of push, that I was able to just sort of slow down, let him ramble, let him talk, and allow this moment for him. And that's the thing, is that's nothing spectacular. That's not some huge God moment. But again, when that inner dialogue is going on, it gives us the tools we need to just slow down. Keep your cool. Don't lose your patience. God's at work even here. And I think what you find is that when we keep this conversation going, things start to change. We start to see the mundane a little differently, whether it's walking the kids to school, packing lunches for kids, whether it's working on your budget. We can do those things. And when the conversation continues, there's a certain joy and peace that we can learn to see even inside of those tasks, even when it's waiting on a rambling cable guy. And this is my own experience. It's hard to talk about, but unless I'm in workflow mode, as in I'm invested in a particular task, and my mind is only on that, unless I'm in workflow mode or probably watching something on Netflix, outside of those two things, typically my days, there's just this running dialogue going on, right? My mind's just racing with voices, thinking thoughts, making commentary, making assessments and judgments of people. Essentially, my head's a cacophony of voices commenting on what I'm experiencing and seeing or what I'm thinking about. I think many of us know this experience. I hope you do. Either that or got something weird going on. But I think this is how many of us experience our days, just these voices going off. We call it our internal dialogue. We call it self-talk. And for Lawrence, the trick seemed to be this. Keep in constant dialogue with God. Allow space in that internal dialogue for God to be present. And so my practice for years now has been to simply invite God into the dialogue. And let me say again, God's never spoken to me in like a Morgan Freeman voice, you know, sort of some deep, gravelly voice. I've never heard anything I thought came from God that didn't sound a lot like my own voice. So I don't want to over-spiritualize this. But for me, this practice has been so helpful, keeping space in my head for God, passing the dialogue that goes on in my head, passing that by God, allowing God the space to be present and witness what's going on in my head. If we're going to develop the eyes to see and bump into God more often, we're going to need practices that help train us to see them, give us the eyes to see them. And I think these two are a great place to start. First, prayer of examine. Inventorying your life. End of the day, whenever it is, just going through your day with eyes to see and look for where God might be present, where God might be absent, when we're at our worst, when we're at our best. And second, Brother Lawrence is practicing the presence of God, keeping ourselves in constant dialogue with God, or at least making space in our internal dialogue for God to witness it and be present to it, and doing things for the love of God. So I hope that helps in some way. Next week, what I want to do is take us through the Celtic Christian tradition. And I want to share a few things I've learned there about how we can see and bump into God more often through some Celtic Christian practices. So we'll do that, and then we'll end this series, and then there's lots of other places to go this season. So thanks for tracking with us, Nexus. I appreciate your presence with me. And for now, I suppose, go in peace.